Hi there, so I'm Laura. I'm from the marketing team at the National Archives, and I'm going to give you a quick introduction to the Operation War Diary project, and then I'm going to hand you over to Steve, who's going to talk in more depth about the data that we've been discovering. So first off, the unit war diaries. Several years ago, we started to prepare for the centenary of the First World War. Our collections, I'm sure many of you know, are very varied and expansive on this topic. They range from discussions held in Whitehall to daily activities on the front, and give us an insight into what happened on the battlefields across the world. We wanted to open these records up for the centenary and to use them to tell the story of Britain's involvement in the First World War in new and exciting ways. By this point, we'd already got a large number of the records digitised. The medal index cards have been online for quite some time. We've got service records, nurses' records, all kinds of things. But we wanted to find something else that would really add to these collections online. We realised that the record series WO95, the Unit War Diaries, was ideal candidate, one of the most popular record series in our reading rooms, and it was vast. It consists of 5,500 pieces or boxes, and each one of those boxes contains, on average, over 700 pages. These pages detail the daily movements of the British Army stationed all around the world. So it was quite apparent that there was a lot of stuff in there, all contained within those boxes. So we basically embarked on what turned out to be our largest digitisation project that we've ever undertaken in-house, the digitisation of 1.5 million pages from the Western Front. So we focused on the Western Front. The biggest challenge was obviously, with all this vast amount of information, how would we get that out? So the war diaries are predominantly made up of the diary pages. They contain the most of the information, but they also have maps, photography, and other handwritten pages that have been inserted through time. We wanted to find out exactly what kind of information was contained in these and help unlock it for researchers. The diaries have always been searchable by unit, so the catalogue data contained the date ranges that the pieces covered. A full transcription would have proved prohibitively expensive and would not necessarily have provided us with the index data that we considered would be important, both for research and for analysis purposes. So with these considerations in mind, we started to look for solutions. At the same time that we were digitising the unit war diaries, we began to have discussions with Imperial War Museums about how we could collaborate jointly as organisations throughout the centenary period. They'd already started to plan their groundbreaking project, Lives of the First World War, so they were really keen on finding new sets of data that could link up to that. Along with IWM, we approached Zooniverse to see if they could become our technical partner on this ambitious project. Zooniverse are based in the astrophysics department at the University of Oxford, and they have a vast portfolio of crowdsourcing projects. They predominantly started, obviously, doing stuff with galaxies and stars. We'd been involved with them previously for the Old Weather Project, which asked volunteers to tag weather observations from historical ship's logs. This data was then given to the Met Office to help chart climate change over about 100 years. Zooniverse were keen as well because they wanted to move into new areas and were particularly interested in developing a First World War related project. So we had lots of discussions, lots of behind the scenes work to work out how we could extract data from the war diaries, and eventually came up with Operation War Diary. It launched in January this year at the same time that we published the digitised diaries onto our discovery system. So we ask volunteers in this project to do two things for us. Firstly, they're asked to classify the page itself. Around half the pages are made up of the standard diary format, but we also want to know what other formats. So where I was talking about, we've got maps and photographs, trying to capture how many of each of those elements we've got. Secondly, depending on the page classification that they give us, the volunteers are then asked to tag different types of data that the page is likely to contain. For the standard diary page, this is usually things like date, time, and place, which normally appears, there's a sort of left-hand column, and that's where a lot of that information sits. The rest of the data that we're asking them to collect is normally within the right-hand side of the page, and this is more the narrative around the unit's movements. So this could contain names of individuals, details of what the unit was up to, when they were mobilising, when they were moving off somewhere, also weather observations, and then just a hell of a lot of other stuff. So it was all dependent on who was writing and what they were up to. So our only requirement of our volunteers was they were willing to get involved and that they were willing to read the handwriting. We put together a short tutorial so that anyone taking part in the Operation War Diary would have a good understanding of the basic skills and knowledge they needed and the tasks that we were asking them to take part in. We've generally found that the volunteers fell into three groups, so where they were coming from. They were the Zooniverse, the people who were experienced crowdsourcers, so they were quite comfortable with this kind of task, but they maybe didn't necessarily have a background of the history of the First World War. The second group was very much people from the National Archives and Imperial War Museum's audiences. So they probably knew a lot more about the history and the First World War itself, but maybe didn't have experience of a crowdsourcing project. And then our third group were generally just new people who've been maybe inspired by all the media coverage for the First World War centenary, found out about it in the media and just come along. So that's partly why we really had to help explain both the background and the task. Since January, we've had 11,500 citizen historians have registered and taken part. But what's quite exciting is that actually that's just the number of people that have registered. And there's a hell of a lot of people who are also more sort of casual visitors to the website and they're tagging stuff but not necessarily registering. So the number is bigger than that. We've had over 100,000 pages have been completed and we've got over 500,000 tags that have been added. Also, what's been proved quite popular is the Operation War Diary website has a talk discussion, and this is where volunteers are able to discuss what's going on. So it's quite nice because obviously as a virtual project, you're not all sat in the same room to be like, oh, look what I found. But the idea of this part of the website is it kind of encourages that approach. It's also been really valuable in people using hashtags. So we gave people fields to fill in for all the data. But when people were discovering that they were finding topics and themes coming up that maybe weren't included within those, they were able to tag the data in a way that meant other people could then also find it. And then people have been coordinating themselves, so making sure that they use consistent hashtags, so getting rid of variations, so that all pages tagged with, say, warhorse doesn't have the variations of warhorse, warhorses, horses, but it all kind of comes under the one umbrella, making it easier for people to find the pages that are there. And with that, I'm going to hand over to Steve.
Right, so I'm going to go through what we've actually been doing to process the data that's coming back from Zooniverse. So Zooniverse run the website and collect all the data. We have users tagging with dates, place names, person names, and things like that. And what we get back from Zooniverse is the data that's been collected. And as well as what people have actually tagged, we get the coordinates on the page of what's been tagged. The Y coordinates are of particular importance because there's implication in them on the page from the 27th of August 1914 and in a place called Ronsoy. We also get the X coordinates as well, which means that although we have multiple people tagging each page, we can identify when they're referring to the same element, same entity on the page. And so an example tag here is the place of Ronsoy, which is located 16% across the page and 29% down the page. And here's an example. Zooniverse produced a sort of back office system that we could use to have a look to see what has been tagged on the page. And here's an example of some of the tags that have been made on this particular page. The numbers in brackets are how many people have tagged a particular entity in a particular location. And so you can see that six or seven people tagged this page. They agreed that the 22nd of August 1914 was tagged on this line. One person, 24th of August, was tagged here. And that's an example of where the multiple keying of the data comes in terms of assuring the data quality at the end of the process. So each page gets tagged by at least five users. Some of them have been tagged by up to seven or nine users. The reason for getting the pages tagged by more than one user at a time is that the more people you have contributing to the page, the more corroborating evidence you have for each tag that they make, that you can resolve typos by looking at the agreed opinion of what was there. And it's less likely that information on the page gets mixed out because somebody's not particularly interested in activities or things like that. The disadvantage, obviously, is that every page gets tagged by five people, so you make slower progress through the data. Once you've had these five different points of view of what's on the page, we use XY coordinates to identify which tags are related to each other and then check the tag type and whether the value of the tag is similar. Some of the tags that people are putting onto the page are from drop-down lists, and so there's a discrete list of values that they can have and they're easy to decide whether they're the same. Others are free text entry for person names and place names, and there we're using algorithms to work out, okay, are they approximately spelt the same? And especially when you're interpreting handwriting, it's sometimes quite difficult to see what's actually on the page. And so once we've got the clusters together, we've identified which users are talking about the same elements on the page, we then establish the consensus of each of those clusters. This is an example. I've been processing the clusters and trying to work out what the consensus is for quite a while, and every time I run the script through, I start from the first page of the first diary. And this is an example from the first page on the first diary, which actually proved quite difficult to establish consensus. I don't know, there's one name there that's quite difficult to read, and one that I think is quite easy to read. I see Captain CD something or other and Lieutenant W80 Barstow. And the contributions that we have for this are Uniac, Ziniac, Amuiac. And then for the second name, the first person to tag it did find W80 Barstow, but then the second person found 80 Bastow, 80 Barston, W Barstow, and 80 Bartstow. And these are all the tags that we have for those particular points on the page, and so actually quite difficult to establish what the consensus opinion is of things on that page. And so I did wonder about maybe we could split up the surnames, and you know, if you get the consensus for surnames there, you probably would agree on Barstow, but then if you got consensus on the initials, you'd get AT. And so I think that's a W. I don't know. It possibly looks like the word two, T-O, but I don't. That wouldn't go between Lieutenant and his surname. The other issue that we had is that we're obligated to recover the costs of our scanning digitization processes. So we wanted to ensure that somebody couldn't just use, somebody who wasn't interested in contributing to the tagging and the data collection couldn't just use it as a method of looking through the diary without just buying the thing from the Discovery website. And it meant that you didn't, the volunteers don't see the pages in order. They see a page in isolation. And sometimes the context isn't there. So here they can see the 21st of January, but it doesn't say what year it is. And so we've had issues of people having only partial information. When we're processing the data, though, we do know what order these pages come in, and so we'd use the same principle that somebody would use if they had the book in front of them. We can work out the page before said 1914, and so this is referring to the 21st of January 1914. And what we end up with is some consensus data. And we've actually now extracted about 64, what we think are 64,000 unique individuals from the data that's been tagged. It's up to 64,000. Not every single mention of a person, for example, lists their rank, their initials, their first name, and their surname. So we can't definitely tell that Private Smith on page one is the same Private A.J. Smith is on page 400. And so we've erred on the side of caution here and not merged people together where we're not 100% sure that they are the same person. And because we're gathering this time and place data as well, it means that we can actually join the data together. As we said, there's X and Y coordinates, so we can tell which bits of information refer to each other. And it means we can actually generate a nice little sort of biography of the person as they go through the war diary. So you can see this is Captain C.A.R. Follett, the places that his unit were at on different dates during the war, the fact that he received awards on particular times involved in combat, and that he was wounded on the 18th of August and presumably died of his wounds the next day on the 19th of August and received an award posthumously on the 12th of September. Another thing that we were concerned about was whether or not the diaries would largely just be referring to officer ranks and not to the lower ranks of the army. And this is some statistical analysis I've done of the data that's been tagged. And you can see that although well more than 50% is officer ranks, we have got 10,000 names of privates, and we've got sergeants and corporals there as well. So we are seeing people of the lower, in the lower ranks also being mentioned. And you know, we generate this index so that eventually somebody will be able to search for their ancestor and find out specifically which pages they're mentioned in the diaries. And one other thing that we've been able to do with the data is plot the locations of the units over time. So I've done a couple of examples here. This is a website called CartoDB, which allows you to upload data sets of places and dates and then animate them. So if I choose the 11th Hussars, yeah, and you can see over time, these are the places that have been mentioned in the diary. and so we can get an impression for how the units have moved. And we're going to release the data sets shortly. We're planning to release both the raw data, which includes the five different points of view of the what's on the page, and also the consensus data set, so that people can potentially come up with their own visualizations or work with the data themselves.
This podcast is copyright to the National Archives. All rights reserved.